One of the little concerns we had, we were due to land back at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. This was only the second time that had been attempted. The landing strip in Florida is extremely short. The problem why it wasn't used for quite a number of flights is with a short runway, they had problems with the brakes. If you got problems with the brakes on a short runway, you've probably got a big problem. But when we did it, we were only the second shuttle ever to land back at Kennedy. The problem that we noticed, this photograph was taken a day before we were due to land. If you look carefully, that's the hurricane. It's Hurricane Josephine. And if you look even more carefully, right about there is the Kennedy Space Center where we were supposed to land. So we figured we had a problem. Interesting about hurricanes though, from on orbit you can fly, if you get it exactly right, fly over a hurricane, look down the eye of a hurricane, and you can literally see the waves of the ocean. It's perfectly clear through the eye. I was quite surprised to see that. Well, fortunately the wind came up and moved the hurricane out to sea. We were given permission to land. So this is the same area taken one orbit before we land, one orbit being 90 minutes. You go around the Earth 90 minutes, which means you go through a day-night cycle in 90 minutes, which means you have 45 minutes of daylight followed by 45 minutes of nighttime. This is pad 39A, 39B. This is pad 39A from which we launch from. And here's the landing strip. Keep in mind that landing strip is still relatively, as I say, relatively short. You start your approach at 17,500 miles an hour. You have no engines. It's a dead stick landing, dead stick approach. You can only get one shot at it. So there's a few things you have to watch on landing. This is the last sunrise that we saw on orbit. As I say, in a 90 minute orbit you go through a sunrise and a sunset sequence every 45 minutes. They're all very beautiful. They all look like this. You'll notice, for example, the layering of the atmosphere. You will also notice how thin the atmosphere is compared to the thickness of the Earth. Don't forget, we human beings live on a planet that has an extremely small, narrow film of atmosphere around it, which is what, you know, preserves our life. So this is what, you know, this environmentalism is really all about, is preserving that thin skin of life-preserving atmosphere around our planet. As you do a deorbit burn to start your approach, as soon as that orbiter starts to go into the atmosphere, even the very thin atmosphere at high altitudes, you're hitting it at a tremendous speed. It generates a lot of heat. That's why you need the tiles, especially the black tiles on the underbelly of the orbiter, so that you don't burn yourself up. It hits the atmosphere at such speed that it literally pulls apart the molecules of the atmosphere. When you pull particles apart at that sort of rate, you form charged ionized gas called a plasma, which you've probably heard about. That plasma glows. It's an orange glow. It's a pulsating orange glow. And so when you start your approach, you look out the cockpit window. This is Bob Crippen. I'm looking over his shoulder taking this photograph, and all you can see is this pulsating orange glow. The difficulty with that is, in a plasma being a charged particles, it will not admit radio energy. A plasma stops transmission of radio energy, and therefore we can't, at this stage, we can't communicate back to mission control. And for about 15, it takes you about 30 minutes from a deorbit burn to a landing. And so for about the first 15 minutes of that 30 minutes, it's what's called the blackout period. It's got nothing to do with us on the orbiter. It's got everything to do with communications. We are blacked out from communications purely and simply because of this plasma that we're generating on re-entry. So you go through all that. Actually, the approach is pretty benign. Of course, we'd practice many times in the STAs or shuttle training aircraft, which are configured to fly like the shuttle. It's a fairly benign approach, except that a jet airliner landing at Kingston Smith Airport in Sydney has a glide path, or the angle of approach, of about between 2 and 3 degrees. The glide path of the shuttle is 19 degrees. You're doing that very fast. The Earth comes up dramatically, so you do a tremendous flare as you before you crash. And just after you do the flare, you put your wheels down. And that's what, by the way, why you don't put your wheels down to the last minute, because you've got to go through the flare maneuver before you put your wheels down. But nevertheless, it's still pretty benign. It's very smooth. You get a bit of wing tip vibration as you come back through the sound barrier, but that's about the only vibration you get in terms of flight approach. Here we are, as I say, coming back at the Kennedy landing strip. This is the bayous or rivers, whatever they call them there. And here we are touching down. You can see the puffs of smoke, just like a commercial airliner. I can assure you, you wait for that sort of thumping down of them, of the main wheels, because at that point in time, you figure once you get your wheels down, that if anything goes wrong now, at least you can probably handle it. Before that, you really had your doubts. But it's sort of a, you know, coming, glad to be home, that sort of feeling that you get as soon as those wheels touch down. And you'd have to hope like hell the Navy found you before you sank. This is far more civilized. You land on solid earth.